in case it wasn't clear to us that Christianity has at its very heart a paradox, this feast day should make it clearer than ever. This is the feast of the exaltation of the Holy Cross. And the paradox is putting together of these two things that don't seem to go together. Exaltation, meaning lift up in triumph, lift up in glory, lift up in acclaim, and then Holy Cross. The cross is a method of public execution. Now, we're used to the cross. We see crosses all the time, so it perhaps doesn't strike us this way, but this feast should make us reflect again on the uniqueness of what we celebrate here, the uniqueness of what has been revealed to us, the greatness of it. One way to think about it, perhaps, you can think about religious art from other religious traditions. Say, go back to the Greeks and the Romans, and their gods are usually the marble statues, you know, the gods are strong and noble, and the goddesses are beautiful and graceful and no blood. Then you think of artwork from, lots of different pagan religions. There might be fierce gods. There might be, you know, dragons and strange beasts. And they're strong. Might be a little bit frightening. But they're not dying. Think of Buddhism. Buddha's not a god. But, I mean, he's sitting there very peacefully in a lotus position. And Asian religions in general, they emphasize harmony. No, harmony. Think of the Japanese garden. Harmony, peace, order. This kind of serene atmosphere in which you can let go of the chaos of the world. No blood, no battles. Of course, Judaism and Islam, they don't have representations of God or of much of anything, maybe some angels. But usually there's some beautiful geometric design or some beautiful sense of order, acceptance that God is in charge. It could go on like that. You can find that religions or any kind of religious artwork, even early Christian art did not emphasize crucifixion scenes. Usually it was Jesus the teacher or the good shepherd or the conveyor of divine wisdom. Think of the icons. The icons don't usually portray crucifixion scenes. And then you get what we have now, and since the Middle Ages, and since the Renaissance for sure, at the very center of Christian artwork is the cross. And not just the cross, you know, two lines, horizontal and vertical, but a dying or dead man on a cross, Jesus Christ. It's quite a shock that at the very heart, the very center of our most beautiful shrines and religious centers is this depiction of public execution. We're used to it, but it's really a contradiction right in our face. Every time we go into a Catholic place, there's this big cross. We got one right here in this shrine. People come in here and they say, oh, what a beautiful chapel, so peaceful, so prayerful. You know, I love to come in here and pray. You come in here and you see a big image of someone being brutally killed. Same in the parish, Mother of the Church, the new church. People go in and they say, look how beautiful it is and clean and there's something very orderly about it, simple, nice lighting. At the very center is a huge graphic depiction of an execution. When people talk about capital punishment nowadays, of course, the church is opposed to capital punishment, but even if there is any discussion of capital punishment, the question is how to do it in a way that is painless, quick, dignified, if you could use that term. So that's why the idea of lethal injection, or just let them go to sleep and never wake up. Or if you think of the French, and the French are very precise about this, they invented the guillotine. If you're going to chop off someone's head, do it fast. Do it fast and do it clean. Don't have somebody hacking away at someone. Just cut off their head and be done with it. It was kind of considered a merciful way of execution. Beheading in general, that's the way it's thought of. It's quick. Crucifixion is not that. Crucifixion is invented by the Romans as a deliberately slow, painful, humiliating form of death. It's the worst. It was the worst they could come up with. You strip the victim, you flog the victim, scourge the victim, make them die, make them drag the instrument of their own death around in public, and hang them up there, and let them struggle for a few hours, if they can live that long. It was a combination of pain, humiliation, public mockery, and death, execution. And that's what we're celebrating. So I see the contradiction here. It's not something to celebrate. It's horrible. It's horrifying. But at the heart of the Christian message is this paradox. And all the readings today bring this out. You have the first reading about the serpent. The serpent was killing the people. And Moses is told, okay, make a serpent and put it up on a pole, and it will save the people. You say, what is this? Is this serpent bad or good? Is this a punishment or is it a healing? It's both. It's got elements of both. And Jesus refers to this in referring to himself. Just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the desert, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Lifted up in death and lifted up in glory. Lifted up as a victim and lifted up as a victor. And in today's second reading, this beautiful hymn of the kenosis, the self-emptying of Christ. Here he is, Jesus Christ, God himself, filled with glory. He doesn't grasp, he doesn't cling to his divine status and glory. He empties himself. And he doesn't just empty himself by becoming man. That would be already unbelievable. I mean, no religion believes that God actually became a man, except Christianity. But not only did he become a man, he became a slave. He became a humble slave. He became obedient unto death, and the worst kind of death. So down, 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 down to the lowest. Because of this, and this is the paradox again, on display very beautifully in this hymn, because of this, because he went so far down, God greatly exalted him and bestowed on him the name above every other name. So from the lowest to the highest, the same person, Jesus Christ, the lowest and the highest. And this is what we celebrate today, this paradox, this contradiction. Scripture scholars nowadays like to summarize the mission of Jesus by calling it the Jesus event. Maybe you heard that term, the Jesus event. It's their way of saying everything that Jesus did, who he is, what he did in his public ministry, word became flesh, you know, miracles, sufferings, death, burial, resurrection, ascension, everything Jesus did, the Jesus event. The other theologians, the less scriptural ones, they usually just talk about the Paschal mystery. The Paschal mystery, that's the little expression to capture the whole thing that Jesus did. But at the very heart of the Jesus event, the very heart of the Paschal mystery is the cross and resurrection. The cross and resurrection, the death and new life. We don't have Christianity if we don't have the cross. We don't have the trophy if we don't have the victim. Now, there are perhaps, we could say, two ways to grapple with this. There's the more theoretical way, or the accepting the principle of the cross, and then there's the personal struggle. So establishing the principle is kind of what I've been doing. This is Christianity. God became man. This man was gave himself as a victim out of love for the world. So that's the way it is. That's how love has expressed itself in its ultimate form. The greatest sacrifice, the greatest love. That principle is the very foundation of our faith. And anyone who's Christian accepts it. But then, people who are struggling with Christianity, with their faith, say, well, how can that be? How can God die? How can suffering be good and all that? Sure, that's difficult. But then, the other level on which we grapple with this mystery is the personal level, when the cross becomes our own personal experience. And for this, we don't have to be nailed to the wood. You just have to have some minor inconvenience. You know, get stuck in traffic or lose your phone or something. And then you realize nature does not take the suffering. Miss a meal. Have somebody make an accusation against you. Get sick. Have a hot day. Have the water get cut off. Any little thing. We're not talking about crucifixion here. We're talking about very minor inconveniences. And you realize we hate this. We don't like suffering. And it always strikes our nature as something to avoid, something to condemn, something to overcome. That's so built in that it's very hard for us to take the mystery of the cross and really let it sink in. Our first reaction to it's always negative. But this is where faith comes in, and grace comes in. If we can get past that initial reaction, which is always going to be there, we can recognize in suffering a way to love, a way to tap into this victory that we celebrate today. Every cross is a cross. It's horrible. But every cross is also a way to be united with Jesus Christ, and that means to be united with his victory. You see this in the lives of the saints, especially the martyrs. They recognize there's something privileged about suffering. There's something powerful about it. It gives us an opportunity to give ourselves in a way we couldn't do it without suffering. To express love in a way we could never do it just with words. It roots this self-emptying process right in our flesh. And that's something to celebrate. It's something to celebrate. And we have to every day embrace this, because that natural reaction against it threatens to kill off our faith altogether. Now, it takes practice, it takes daily practice. Every day we make some, or we should, make some decisions against our self-serving nature. Some self-discipline, some asceticism, some saying no to the inner child. Say, okay, no, now it's time to get up out of bed. Now it's time to pray. Now it's time to serve. Now it's time to make a gift of yourself. And every time we do that, we're experiencing the cross, both in its painful ugliness and in its powerful victory, if we can do it. So this is what we're being encouraged to celebrate today. This is a joyful feast. It's a joyful feast. We hold up the cross in triumphant procession here, fully aware that what we're holding up is a painful, humiliating death. And we're saying, painful, humiliating death, you can't defeat us. We're saying all the threats of the world, all the threats of suffering, all the threats of loss, all the threats of rejection, you can't intimidate us. This has been already transformed into a way to victory. You want to kill me? Go ahead. That's the way the martyrs talk. Yesterday, we had a great reading from St. John Chrysostom. He was being sent into exile. I don't know if any of you read that reading from the Office of Readings. He's about to be sent into exile, into a remote and desolate place. And he says, what are you going to do? Take away my life? Life is Christ. Death is so much gain. What are you going to do? Take away my possessions? We came into this world with nothing. We leave it with nothing. You're trying to intimidate me? He's laughing in the face of his persecutors. That's what this feast does. It's like laughing in the face of death. It's not pretending that it's not difficult. It's not pretending that it's not painful. It's saying, even though it is difficult, even though it is painful, even though we do have a natural resistance to it, it still does not defeat us. We celebrate it. Well, that's this feast. Now, it's something to celebrate and something to struggle with. Tomorrow we will turn to Our Lady to get some insight into how to remain at the foot of the cross and not run away from it. But that's tomorrow, Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows. For today, we just hold up this paradox of our faith, this central seeming contradiction of our faith, and we say, praise be to God. He has shown us a way to victory over death itself by taking on death. And we're his followers, we're his disciples. So we're taking on death without being intimidated by it, without complaining about it, taking it on, saying, okay, this is the path to glorious victory.